You are listening to Formosa Files. Hi, I'm David Fraser. I'm a journalist and writer based in Taiwan for over 25 years. Recently, I wrote a piece for the South China Morning Post's Weekend magazine on the history of the combat zone in Taipei.
Formosa Files.
So, the combat zone. Combat zone was?
The combat zone was and still is a bar district in Taipei around Zhongshan North Road. And as I started looking into it and talking to people, in many ways, it's the seedbed of American or foreign culture in the city of Taipei and the island of Taiwan, or at least sort of the modern Taiwan as we know it. The history dates back to the early 1950s when the American military established cooperations with Taiwan and established bases. And it was actually near the American military base that the bar zone sort of took root.
And it's no surprise probably to most people that if you have a large group of soldiers in a particular area, the oldest profession in the world is going to also be a part of that. So there was definitely prostitution happening in those areas.
Yeah, by the 1960s, it became a very big unofficial red light district. And I say unofficial because the government actually had legalized prostitution and had created two official red light districts, one in Wanhua around Snake Alley and the other in Dadaocheng. There's still a museum there on Guisuijie, which is an old brothel that has sort of been preserved and you can walk in and take a look around. But the area where the American military men went was separate. That was on Zhongshan North Road. In the 1950s, it started around Jingzhou Street. By the end of the 1950s, Jingzhou Street was known as Sin Alley. There were actually not a lot of bars there. A few people I talked to said there were only three bars, the Diamond Horseshoe Bar, the American, and the Little Woman Bar. But looking at some websites run by former servicemen, I see that there probably were a few more. But anyway, Jingzhou Street was known as Sin Alley, and in the mid-19, early 50s, that was pretty much the place to go.
You and I have both been here long enough to understand that although Taiwan is progressive in many things, you know, for example, legalizing gay marriage, we are still a very conservative country when it comes to discussing adult behavior, you know, and the fact that I use a euphemism there is for a reason. Most Taiwanese people don't want to talk about the subject of sex or prostitution. But you're talking about a time in the 1950s and 60s when Taiwan, perhaps it was still as conservative, but this was out in the open. It was totally legal. And these people were supporting their families, no?
I can make like a small tangent here on the history of sort of morality in the ROC. So Chiang Kai-shek, on one hand, he was an extremely strict moralist. But on the other hand, he was extremely pragmatic. So there's a thing you might not know about. In 1934 in China, Chiang launched something called the New Life Movement, which was a civic morality movement based on principles of the American Protestant Church and especially the YMCA. So he created this group called the Blue Shirts, which were actually sort of modeled on the Nazi Brown Shirts, to enforce morality in China's cities and things like banning mahjong drinking. And they wanted to regulate pop music and make sure that there was nothing lewd or licentious in it. And so this thread went all the way through his entire rule up until he died in the 1970s. But at the same time, as soon as he got to Taiwan, he legalized, his KMT legalized prostitution, knowing that it was necessary for the soldiers serving. So they basically opened military brothels shortly after arriving in Taiwan in the late 1940s.
Yeah, the infamous ones that many of us have heard of on Jinmen or Mazu, for example.
Right. But by the same token, he established legitimate, licensed red light zones in Taipei and probably other cities as well. It was very well known where the prostitutes were, where the prostitution was happening. And it was also very contained to specific neighborhoods. So in Taipei, it was down Wanhua around Snake Alley and also Da Dao Cheng, a little bit north of that in the western Taipei. And then with the arrival of the U.S. military, you got an unofficial bar zone and red light district that sprang up around Zhongshan North Road. And this was a place where the women by the 1960s did have licenses. There is a sort of a famous thing. So when servicemen wanted to take a woman out of a bar, they had to fill out a form called the registration form for outgoing waitresses. Okay. And this was literally a piece of paper that was kept in the bar that the GI signed. So there is no way that the government and the police did not know what was going on because they had bureaucratically institutionalized how it was happening.
But doesn't that also give the woman a huge amount of protection?
Yes, absolutely. I don't know exactly the reasons why the Taiwan's police did this. I just know that it was very well defined and regulated at the time. And there are probably, like, as you said, a lot of benefits for that.
So the reason we are actually talking about this is because back in 2019, I think the Taiwan in Time column, Hong Chun writes that, he wrote a review of this book that came out in, what year was it?
Taipei After Dark came out in 1969.
Okay, so Taipei After Dark was also mentioned by my co-host, John Ross, in his book, Taiwan in 100 Books. And it portrayed Taipei as like Sodom and Gomorrah.
So I think the cover quote on this book, which was published in the West, is "Blatant Sex Capital of Asia, where vice is legal and the price is right."
So then you went to investigate some of these claims.
Well, I was curious because you see something like this from the 1960s, it's a bit fantastical, but then you start sort of leafing through and you're reading. It also has political summaries. It talks about Chiang Kai-shek's politics, the KMT. And I started thinking, this is actually feels like it's written by somebody who might be a journalist. The author, Andrew Harris, I pretty quickly figured out was a pen name. So it wasn't his real name. And then reading John Ross's Taiwan in 100 Books, John had actually figured out who this guy really was. He was a writer named Fred Poole who wrote something like close to 10 legitimate guidebooks of Asia, the various countries of Asia. And this is before Lonely Planet and Rough Guide, but this is like late 60s, early 70s guidebooks to the region. And then for this UK publisher called McFadden Press, he also authored 3 books in their After Dark series, which is basically talking about the red light districts in places like Taipei, Bangkok, Manila, and so on.
And what are some of the misconceptions that maybe some of us have about that time?
My sense is that a lot of the history is actually lost and forgotten. You know, as you said, the Taiwanese don't really relish talking about the history of prostitution on the island. It was actually a very real thing, and in the 1960s became a big part of the economy. So sort of getting back to the topic of the combat zone, which is this bar zone. In the 1950s, you have one street, Sin Alley, Jingzhou Street, which has maybe 3 bars, maybe half a dozen. Then the Vietnam War starts. And with the Vietnam War, you get more servicemen all throughout Asia. And so you get more in Taipei. And so at the time, Tainan served as a repair hub for the U.S. Air Force. And then you have like all sorts of bases in Taipei. And then you have all these links between bases in Taiwan and the Philippines and Thailand and Vietnam and so forth. So you have a lot more GI stationed here and a lot more coming through.
So we became the R&R center for a lot of the Vietnam War fighters.
Right. So the U.S. military established the R&R program in 1965. And what that did was it gave GIs in the field five-day breaks from the fighting so that they could basically hop on a plane, pick one of about five or six cities throughout Asia so they could go to Bangkok or Taipei or Tokyo or Manila or wherever, do 5 days of R&R, and then they'd go back. So during the R&R program, Taipei received somewhere over of 200,000 U.S. GIs coming through on these short-term vacation stays during those 7 years. The program wrapped up in 1972. But in Taipei, so what happened was the bar district started expanding and growing. So you go from sort of like three bars or half a dozen bars. Now, by 1968, the soldiers, when they arrive, are getting a little booklet on 26 bars in Taipei, but there were actually many more than that. And so the district started spreading north. If you kept going north, sort of like the logical conclusion of it, at Minzu West Road, the corner of Minzu West Road and Zhongshan North Road, was the American military base. It was called the Military Advisory and Assistance Group. Everyone just called it MAG. Yeah. So this was a huge compound that had administrative offices, bowling alleys, movie theaters. It had the PX, which is like a big department store that only military people and their dependents can buy things in, and also a source of black market goods to the local economy.
What sits on the site now?
So now on the west side of Zhongshan North Road is Maji Square, which is a popular restaurant and nightclub area. On the east side is the Taipei Fine Arts Museum, which was built in 1983, only 4 years after the U.S. military pulled out of Taiwan.
Do you think that they were trying to get rid of the memory of that as quickly as possible?
That's conjecture. I don't know exactly what the Taiwan government said, but I seem to have heard things to that extent.
And it always helps us to remember, you were talking about 68 and those years. Taiwan had started to begin the economic miracle. But if you go back just a few years before that, we're talking about a desperately poor island.
So many of Taiwan's industries that it's known for today, electronics, bicycles, and so on, trace their roots back to the 1960s. Taiwanese were still pretty poor. I think the registration form for outgoing waitress, the one copy I saw in 1968 or 70 or something like that, listed the price of taking a girl home from one of these GI bars as 400 NT. So it was not a lot of money in those days. And for poor women in the countryside or people in very tough economic situations, where a young woman had to become the breadwinner for her family, there are documented cases of that being the reason why they went to work in the bars of Taipei.
And we are soon going to release an interview with Nancy Chen Baldwin, who she was sold as a young girl and ended up being like the servant to a prostitute. And you also reviewed her book and you wrote about that. And one of the things that was interesting when I did just a little pre-interview with her is she talks about how she came to view this prostitute as a hero for doing what she had to do to provide for the people she loved. And, you know, this modern day, perhaps judgmental attitude that is out there with some people should be reexamined and thought of in terms of, you know, what it was like. You could either work in a field and maybe keep the rice on the table, or you could do this and maybe provide for half the village.
Nancy's book was really interesting. I really enjoyed it. And one of the things that she points out was that at the time, Taiwanese viewed the women who worked in GI bars as traitors to the Chinese race. There was a lot of baggage and disparagement that went along with what they were doing. Obviously, it's a very tough individual decision and often forced by circumstances. We had just mentioned Taiwan's growing economy. Taiwan's industrial roots sort of go back to the 60s, but then through the 70s, it's picking up steam. And then by the 80s, it's really booming. The 80s boom also followed on the heels of Taiwan breaking relations with the U.S. So all the U.S. military pulled out of Taiwan in 1979. So then you have this sprawling bar district that's going over three very large city blocks. It's about like a couple of kilometers long on Zhongshan North Road. And who are the new patrons going to be? What happened, like very quickly, is the new clientele were the foreign businessmen who are coming into Taiwan to do deals with Taiwan's factories and do their manufacturing here. So in the 80s, Taiwan became the shoe capital of the world. It made Barbie dolls and early electronics and all this stuff was being produced here. And these people absolutely flooded the bars of Taipei. And the interesting thing is when the GIs were here, the area was never known as the combat zone. They had their other little nicknames for it. So Jingzhou Street was Sin Alley. There was a part of Zhongshan North Road that was called Sugar Daddy Row, which is a bunch of bars in a row. But they never called it the combat zone. And I've talked to dozens of people about this. Nobody knows where the name combat zone actually originated. But the consensus is that it actually surfaced or emerged in the 1980s after the military had left. So it was sort of a tribute to that previous military legacy, but an after-the-fact tribute. And then, so anyway, in the 1980s, the center of this bar district, again, sort of shifted more north. So it went to Shuangcheng Street, and specifically Shuangcheng Street Alley number 32, which is this one tiny alley which was lined with like 40 or 50 bars. Last week, one of the bar owners there told me that around 2000, Taipei city government was considering making this area into Taipei's Lan Kwai Feng to make it a walking street bar zone. Apparently, the plan never got off the ground. What this fellow told me was that because more than 50% of the bars had the wrong licenses and were in effect illegal, and were afraid to work with the government on anything because they didn't want to pay more tax. Sounds like a likely explanation.
Very. After doing all this research and looking into all these places and talking to so many people, what emotions did you come away with? Oh, like on a personal level, if you would be so kind to share.
I would say my interest for this is having lived here as an expat for 25 years, I'm curious as to the history of expats in Taiwan and where these sort of institutions of expat life came from. I think like maybe not a lot of people will admit it, but sort of bars and clubs and restaurants are the most obvious and memorable markers of the expat community. It's just a fact, you know.
That's where you met your friends and, yeah, you had adventures. And
right. I was at the Taipei Times from 2000, and I covered the music scene and bar scene and this. And then I became curious about what went on before. So from 1979 to 1980 is a big gap when the military leaves, and then what has to replace it is a civilian expat society. And the combat zone actually in the 1980s was the most happening place where if you were an expat in Taipei, where you would go out. It was the site of the first ever British pub in Taiwan. It was opened by Mike Cottingham, a British expat who had come over as an engineer. He opened it in 1978. He opened other bars in the area. Also, you know, on that same Shuangcheng Street, Lane 32, he opened the Farmhouse, which became one of the founding hotspots for Taipei's rock and roll scene. And that's actually the bar where Wu Bai met his band China Blue when they were substituting for another band. And they all came together one night and were jamming on stage and were like, hey, let's start a band. And then 10 years later, he's the biggest rock star in one of the biggest rock stars in the Mandarin speaking world. So, you know, this history is sort of important in terms of the cultural institutions of expat life in a way of how we as expats fit into this society. So the history is, in a sense, being lost. It was important to a lot of people. So as historians, it is important to record and remember these things.
You had one part in your article about a serviceman who was featured in one of these photo shoots and then sent back to the battlefield and he was killed.
Well, that was a famous photo, and I'm trying to remember the year, but basically during the R&R years, the late 60s, it could have been 65, 66, 67, Time Magazine did a big spread for their Christmas issue on the R&R program. So this was seen by literally everyone in America. And the photo that they put of Taipei was of this good-looking American boy in a hot spring in Beitou with two naked women bathing him. Chiang Kai-shek and the government was not happy about that. It didn't present a good image. They didn't seem to mind that the services were available, but they didn't want that as a stain on their reputation. And then the sad story about the photo is that by the time the magazine was actually published, the soldier in the photo had been killed in action.
Yeah, we're not taking positions here on prostitution or something, but it sort of makes me happy to think that perhaps he enjoyed a little bit of peace and serenity before having to go back to that whore and then die.
Right. So in Taiwan, actually, there was sort of an interesting backlash. The government wanted to take action and it wanted to sue somebody. And then after going through, they decided not to sue or press charges against somebody. And then they decided, okay, well, the serviceman is gone. And then to prosecute anyone related to the U.S. military would be too difficult and too ugly. So they actually found one of the women in the photo, and then they brought charges against her. So this woman became the scapegoat and then became a big topic of reporting and conversation. And I think one of the ironies was that her name was Mei Ling, which was also the name of Chiang Kai-shek's wife, Song Mei Ling. There were sort of cries of like, why can't Mei Ling just make a living? She didn't really do anything too wrong. Eventually, after this woman was sort of put through the ringer and in the media for over a year, the charges were finally dropped. That's sort of the legacy. And then it also goes back to what we're saying about stigmas towards prostitution in Taiwan, even though it was technically legal and she had a license and all these things, there was a moral outcry and she was sort of made as a sort of a pariah for a while. You know, what they say about the sort of East Asian patriarchy generally tends to be true, and it informs a lot of this sort of morality type laws like this.
Okay, well, I've kept you long enough. Thank you very much, Mr. Fraser, for speaking with us on Formosa Files. And thanks for doing this research. As you said, it's an important part of Taiwan's history, whether people feel a bit uncomfortable about it or not. It needs to be documented.
Well, thanks. I will also have another piece coming out in the Taipei Times, which is a sort of more detailed, local-oriented history of the combat zone and its various stages. And I'd also like to say I'm a big fan of Formosa Files. I've listened to nearly every episode and very pleased to be on the podcast.
The Taiwan History Podcast, Formosa Files, is made possible through the generous sponsorship of the Frank C. Chen Foundation.